My name is Andrew Barclay, and I played local boy Malcolm Heathcliff in the second season of Grace and Favour. The way in which I got cast in Grace and Favour is a bit odd. The BBC has always had a reputation for offering training in world-class television, as well as producing programmes or broadcasting programmes by other companies. And I'd been fairly lucky, and I kept getting invited back to TV training to work with new directors, to work with people who were learning their craft and finally going to be employed by the BBC as producers and directors. And one of the guest speakers in that, one of the people that came along to training to talk to new directors of comedy and sitcom, was Mike Stevens. And he, as you know, is the brains behind Grace and Favour. He was a very big producer-director at the BBC. The fact that he was producer and director on shows is quite a testament to his skills and abilities, because those are two massive individual jobs. And I think he spotted me doing various bits of training and then offered me an interview. And it was as simple as that. So I went to an interview or casting and had a few read-throughs of the script. And then I was thoroughly delighted and surprised when I got a phone call from my agent saying, yep, you've been hired to appear in the second series, and they'd like you to play this character, Malcolm Heathcliff. So it all happened through, I think, being seen doing something else, which is often the way in life. In terms of my contribution, I was very lucky because I was written into the script both on the location scenes and in the studio scenes. So this was wonderful because it extended my stay with Grace and Favour, and it meant I got to go out to this beautiful location, a manor house somewhere out in the West Country, and spend some time there. And it then meant several weeks later, when everybody returned to the television centre to do the weekly broadcasts, the weekly recordings, which included all the studio scenes, I was involved there too. So for me, it was fantastic. So I was involved with the process all the way through. And it was a chance to meet all these fantastic actors and then meet them all over again. And it also meant I got to go to, because I was doing the studio stuff, I got to go to rehearsals. And these took place in the old BBC rehearsal rooms in North Acton, no longer there, I think. But it was an enormous tower block that had three giant rooms per floor, all of which were, when I was there, were busy with different sitcoms and shows. And the BBC used this building. So you'd mark out the floor. So you'd rehearse in there all week for the studio bits. And then on one day before the shoot, all the technical departments would come in, follow the action so that they all knew what they were going to be doing at Television Centre. Because obviously it's far too expensive to spend a week in a TV studio. So you spend one day in the studio and then you spend the rest of your week in the rehearsal room. And then going out to the countryside was lovely. It was very pretty. It was very rural and a very nice. It was like going to a National Trust property, something Manor. I can't quite remember the name. I'm sure it'll come to me. Working with the regular cast members who'd been in Are You Being Served and then moved into Grace and Favour was fantastic. The thing was, most of them, obviously there were much older, I suppose, by then. And this made them all very comfortable in what they were doing. They were very relaxed. They were quite, we call them chilled now. We call them quite a chilled bunch of actors because they weren't worried about anything. I think sometimes when you have young actors or rising stars, they're always looking over their shoulder a bit and they're always trying to establish that, they're the bee's knees, this, that or the other. But these guys, there was nothing like that. They really were a wonderful company. They each had their speciality, if you like, which Mike Stevens once described to me. He said, this is the type of show where each character at a certain time gets their own bit. And if it were in an old-fashioned theatre cabaret, it would be the moment they came up to the centre stage, to the mic, did their bit, and then got off. So I thought that was a really interesting analogy. And when one read the scripts, it was very much like that. Either Mr. Humphreys would be featured in this bit, or then suddenly Captain Peacock and so on and so forth. And they were all terribly experienced. They were all quite funny people, actually. They knew how to deliver lines. And they were very, very kind to the actors visiting the set, because sometimes when you're playing a small role, people don't really, you know, haven't got time. Everyone's so busy because you've got only a certain number of hours in the day that people are always rushing by. And one, sometimes you can end up sort of sitting on your own waiting for your bit to come up. But they were all so friendly. They were all very chatty, very approachable. They were exactly what you wanted of TV stars. And that's a lovely thing to be able to say. They were stars, you know, they were people that I'd grown up watching. And I really thought they were terrific. And they created a very happy, from my perspective, very funny environment in which to work. And I think I sort of had to pinch myself. I couldn't believe it. It was like, wow. Because I'd always liked comedy. And as an actor, to then be, you know, working with these comedy veterans at the very tail end of that kind of humour, before I think there was a big revolution in primetime and, fringe comedy, it was wonderful. Do I have a favourite character out of the regular cast? This is such a difficult question because they were all so friendly and so approachable and so lovely. I do particularly remember I got on very well with Captain Peacock, a terrific actor. He was such an interesting character. He'd fought or served with the RAF in the Second World War. And in quiet moments, this is Frank Thornton, quiet moments, he and I would chat about that because I'd had an uncle who'd served in the RAF. And we struck up a bit of a rapport and we found that we were able to talk about things other than just the show. And he seemed genuinely interested when I told him about what I was doing. I mean, he had no reason to, really. And then an interesting thing happened. A few years later, I was working on another show and he was making a guest appearance. He walked into this rehearsal room. I looked around, ignored all the main people and saw me and went, "Hello, Andrew." And I was the proudest moment of my life. I'd been recognized by someone who is famous and he'd said hello to me first. And he actually, I couldn't believe he remembered me. And I thought that was really lovely. And I'd always, you know, seen him in Frank Thornton had appeared in many, many comedies over the years. If you watch carefully, he appears in dozens and dozens of series and films. And so it was really lovely to have that link with somebody who went back, had this fantastic heritage of comedy. So I think I had a good relationship with him, definitely. Mr. Humphreys, there we go. He's a very funny guy as well. He was enormously funny. He'd had a whole career as an entertainer. And I can't repeat it in this podcast, but some of the things he would say to me about what I was wearing, it was summer, I think, in rehearsals. And he didn't hesitate to tell me what he thought of my brightly coloured beach shorts. But he was again, another very funny actor. And I think this is, it's lovely to be able to say you've spoken to people whose work you respect and who make it look so effortless. So I'd say those two, would be high on my list. Sadly, as far as I know, Grace the Favour was never released on VHS or DVD for UK consumption. It was sold to the States, but retitled Are You Being Served Again? In order to keep the continuity going with the original series. There is a royalty structure. The BBC were always very rigorously fair on that sort of thing. But you may have heard this before, but this is not a joke. I have genuinely, from that show, received a royalty check or a statement that was actually worth less than the second class stamp that was used to post it. So sadly, there isn't big money. I don't know what kind of arrangements the main cast would have had. But the BBC, generally, they paid you properly. There'd be a standard contract where you'd be paid, and it probably paid you. The first payment was for two broadcasts, and then subsequent broadcasts were worked out differently. And if it sold abroad or to different countries, one would get a percentage of whatever it was one earned. But literally, yes, I think the lowest, the one I got, was about 17 or 18 pence. So it wasn't quite enough to retire to my gold house in the south of France. So sadly, fame and fortune did not beckon from grace and favor and those royalty checks. Were there things that didn't quite go right? Well, yes, I told a lie. I told a lie and it came back to haunt me. As a young actor, I'd watched an interview with the late Steve McQueen, the big US movie star. And he was saying at this interview that when you went to an audition, you should say yes to everything. Whatever they ask you, you say yes. So if they say, can you ride a bike? You go, yes. Can you ride a horse? Yes. Do you know how to jump around on motorbikes? Yes. You know, can you fly to the moon? Yes. So I said yes to everything I was asked at the initial interview with Mike, the director. And then we filmed the scene which involved the thing to which I said yes. And it's it was a game of cricket. And at the end of filming it, he walked up to me and said, you can't actually play cricket, can you? Even though you told me you could. And I went, no, I've not played cricket. I don't know. Because apparently my bowling was uniformly awful. Didn't look like I'd ever picked up, but I fibbed. He said, you know how to play cricket? How hard can that be? I was thinking, yes, I know how to play cricket. But stupidly, I should have gone and got a friend of mine or someone to practice with me. So I learned a lesson there. You can say yes to something, but at least go out and make an effort. Don't just turn up and do what you think will work. So that, that was a memory that's quite funny. And I think he was a little bit cross that just for that night, his lovely setup and shot of the bowling, I looked like a total amateur who never played before, which wasn't supposed to be the aim. So we were supposed to thrash the Are You Being Served characters at this cricket match, but the way I was playing, I don't think I could have beaten the primary school. So that's one of the happy memories. Now, I think I'd like to have worked on more episodes of shows such as Grace and Favour because they had a certain innocence and charm about them. There was nothing malicious in these shows. They were perhaps a little old-fashioned by the time Grace and Favour arrived, but they were really part of the post-war tradition of comedy, which was a lot of cheekiness on BBC radio and then on television. The rules for a long time were such that one couldn't use bad language. There were certain things one couldn't say. So all the sort of British sense of humour of innuendo, suggestion and sort of sly underhand eyebrow raising were quite a standard. And I think that had started to erode by the comedy revolution of the 1980s, where particularly stand-up comedy, the Comedy Store, started to influence people to write comedy going in a slightly different direction, perhaps a little harsher, perhaps a little more brutal. So while I would like to have done more, I don't know if it could have carried on that much longer. I think that I would like to have done more shows, but I think the Croft and Perry and other comedies of that nature had probably come to the end of their shelf life for new broadcast. While there will always be an audience that appreciates suggestive humour that doesn't become offensive, doesn't upset anyone watching, I think those days had really just about passed by then. And after new comedies like Father Ted and shows like that, you couldn't really go back. I don't think there was a way back after that. So, alas, I think that it was the end of an era for certain types of television comedy, but one which I think will be always celebrated. And I think clips from many of those Perry and Croft and Perry and Lloyd shows, they'll be shown forever because so many of the setups and payoffs are beautifully written, beautifully shot, beautifully performed, and still very, very funny. I did meet Jeremy Lloyd. It was quite a convoluted story. My agent at that time represented Lionel Blair, who'd been a massive staple originally of film and obviously his television, firstly as a dancer, latterly as an entertainer in various light shows. And I'd been writing some material, and so my agent set up a meeting between the two of us at this restaurant in somewhere in London, South London, South Kensington, somewhere like that, where we were going to chat through a few ideas. And as we walked in through the door, this chap sitting on his own at the table said, "Oh, hello, Lionel." And I said, "Jeremy," and introduced me. And it was Jeremy Lloyd, who happened to be sitting in there. And we had a marvelous chat. I'm thinking, wow, you know, this is Jeremy Lloyd, who obviously started as an actor. You know, he was a very funny sort of, he played very upper class, terribly posh guardsman types. Very funny guy, really funny guy. And I'm thinking, wow, I'm sitting here with someone that, who not only did that, you know, started his movie career probably in the 50s, but has also got this fantastic writing track record. And then to top, you're not going to believe this, to top it off, while I was then sitting and talking to Lionel Blair, Tom Jones came in. Oh, hello, Tom, introduced me. So I met Tom Jones. Now, I'm 6'2". Tom Jones, way bigger than me. Fantastic. Really does have a barrel chest where this amazing voice comes from. So listen, I was just utterly starstruck. There I was. I don't know anybody. I'm nobody in particular. And I suddenly, it's like a comedy sketch. It's like a restaurant only inhabited by singers, writers and actors. And I seem to have walked into it. But Jeremy Lloyd was an interesting chap to chat to. He spent time talking about how he'd set up a particular idea for a new script he was working on. And, you know, a real character. And what a pleasure to say you've met these people. After Grace and Favour, I was lucky enough to work with Mike Stevens a couple of more times. The first time was he gave me a part in an episode of The Britass Empire, another really funny show, except this one was a lot more physical. I was in an episode where the entire sports centre blew up. There was rubble everywhere. There was smoke. There were ambulances. I mean, if you didn't know, you'd think it really had blown up due to this gas leak. And then some years later, I got a commission from Channel 4 to write a filthy late night puppet show, which fortunately no one saw. But it was a lot of work. And Mike Stevens, ever open to a new challenge, came and directed them for us, which was fantastic because we'd never have got through the material without his skill and expertise. So that was a really nice thing. He'd got me involved in something. I later got him involved with something. And again, I feel he's one of those people I feel very privileged to have worked with because Mike Stevens himself has a very long heritage with British comedy going back to the, you know, back to the 70s and 80s. So what a delight. So I think I've been very lucky. My association with Grace and Favour was wonderful. So what have I been up to since Grace and Favour? Well, I spent many years doing comedy shows all over the place. Taking my own comedy shows to the Edinburgh Festival. That led to various television jobs, writing jobs. And of course, naturally, this long path has led me to where I am now, which is to be an academic. I teach at the University of Hertfordshire. I co-run the film and television production course. So all the things I've learned over years and years of working in television and film, I now teach to young people in the hope of setting them off on the same strange, mad adventures that I have, because I'd love them all to go through many of the things I did. So yes, it's quite strange. That's not to say I do still perform. I had a small part in a Channel 4 drama last year, and I'm always open to, you know, ideas. Still waiting for that international film role. But in the meantime, I keep myself busy wearing my mortarboard, my gown, and being a crusty academic looking at books, which is a great pleasure. Well, thank you very much indeed for involving me, and thank you for creating the podcast, and thank you for curating this very important part of British comedy history. This is the academic in me speaking now. You will find that the sort of work you're doing is material that will subsequently be used by students and academics to analyse comedy tastes at that time, why certain decisions were made. So it's actually very important work. So thank you very much.